This is the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Allison Stewart. In John Hunter's fourth grade class, the students aren't tied down to their desks.
All right, we're going into negotiation as of now.
I say to the students every day when we start class, I'm sorry, boys and girls, I'm afraid we're going to have fun today.
Back in the late 70s, John created a hands-on political simulation called the World Peace Game, and it's been a part of his classroom ever since.
Gaby has given me a promise that he did go and buy those troops secretly. And I believe he's trying to arm the World Bank and try to get everyone mixed up.
Fourth graders become prime ministers, secretaries of state, and are asked to solve problems typically reserved for the adult leaders of the world.
We have, ethnic and minority tensions. We have chemical and nuclear spills, nuclear proliferation. There's oil spills, environmental disasters, water rights disputes, breakaway republics, famine, endangered species, and global warming. If Al Gore is here, I'm going to send my fourth graders from Agnew Hurt and Venable School to you because they solve global warming in a week.
John Hunter got the chance to explain more about his game at TED in 2011. And he's with me now. John, welcome to the TED Radio Hour.
Hi, Allison. Thanks for having me.
What is the World Peace Game, John?
Oh, my goodness. It's been called a geopolitical simulation or exercise, and it's a gigantic, towering plexiglass structure with thousands of game pieces on four different levels, and I'm sure you can hear in the talk how complex it is. And it's deliberately complex, putting students in situations as world leaders, arms dealers, United Nations bodies, and they're charged with solving the larger problems of the world, and they're trying to do without combat if possible. They use Sun Tzu's The Art of War to try and see how not to go through those activities. But, of course, in the game, the rules are so open, they're allowed to do whatever they can conceive and can understand the consequences of. They can act that way, and they sometimes learn by doing, and sometimes they learn by choosing another path. And that allowance, that open space to make that kind of choice, I think is the strength of the game, really.
If you look on the World Peace Game map, he has like that much oil.
So does Caden. And Caden's our complete ally.
But you know what it really boils down to? The game is actually just a pretext for fostering critical and creative thinking in children and fostering that effort that they make to design their own tools to solve problems. And hopefully they carry that with them as they leave and go further into the world. And, you know, I used to be asked, what's the purpose of the game? And I'd say something educational. And now I say it's really to decrease suffering and to increase the opportunity for compassion.
John, your story was made into a documentary called World Peace and Other Fourth Grade Achievements, a great title. And, you know, you used a little bit of it in your TED talk, and I watched the documentary. And one of the things that is so interesting about it is, at times, it appears a little bit chaotic, but in the good way. Is it as chaotic when those kids all of a sudden find themselves to be prime ministers and arms dealers?
You're very kind to say chaotic in a very good way. Yes, and it's designed to allow that much confusion and complexity to go on. And in a way, it mirrors life. Life is not always neat and orderly. We like for it to be so. So we try to emulate that situation and give students a safe opportunity to work on problems of that intensity at a much lower magnitude. But they take those roles on so seriously, and suddenly they seem to become bigger than themselves because they have then a responsibility for their people. And ultimately, as we go through the game, about midway through, there's a sort of a clicking point where they realize that they have responsibility for everyone, not just their own group or their own selves. And that's really the magic of it, is when that non-preaching or non-teaching about compassion is evidenced through their actual experience in the game, where they learn that they are stewards and caretakers of everyone, just in practice, really.
We had played the game one session after school for many weeks, about 7 weeks, and we had essentially solved all 50 of the interlocking crises. The way the game is won is all 50 problems have to be solved. Every country's asset value has to be increased above its starting point. Some are poor, some are wealthy. There are billions. A World Bank president was a third grader one time. He said, how many zeros in a trillion? I got to calculate that right away. But he was setting fiscal policy in that game for high school players who were playing with him. So The team that was the poorest had gotten even poorer. There was no way they could win. We were approaching 4 o'clock, our cutoff time. There was about a minute left. And despair just settled over the room. I thought, I'm failing as a teacher. I should have gotten it so they could have won. I should have brought them to they shouldn't be failing like this. I've failed them. And I was just feeling so sad and dejected. And suddenly, Brendan walked over to my chair and he grabbed the bell I rang to signal a change or reconvening of cabinets. He ran back to his seat, rang the bell. Everybody ran to his chair. There was screaming. There was yelling, waving of their dossiers. They get these dossiers full of secret documents. They were gesticulating. They were running around. I didn't know what they were doing. I'd lost control of my classroom. Principal walks in. I'm out of a job. The parents are looking in the window. And Brennan runs back to his seat. Everybody runs back to their seat. He rings the bell again. He says, we have, and there's 12 seconds left on the clock. We have all nations pooled all our funds together. And we've got $600 billion. We're going to offer as a donation to this poor country. And if they accept it, it'll raise their asset value and they can win the game. Will you accept it? And there are 3 seconds left on the clock. Everybody looks at this prime minister of that country. And he says, yes. And the game is won. Spontaneous compassion that could not be planned for, that was unexpected and unpredictable.
You've talked a lot about what the World Peace Game has done for your students. How has it changed you as a teacher?
What it does is it first of all, shows me my arrogance and my uninsightfulness, because I will have created a crisis where there's actually some trace of my own baggage, my own prejudice in there, and the students will explode that. They will see that, understand this crisis doesn't make sense. It's a little skewed, Mr. Hunter. So I'll have to rewrite it, come up with another approach. And so often I'm basically getting a great reflection on my own practice, how I need to improve as a teacher through their efforts in the game, their practice, what they reveal, what they show. And every time we play, I do not know what they're going to do. The game is designed that way. It's designed to fail massively, and they have to come out of that somehow.
They say I can't withdraw that, and since I'm withdrawing,
no,
they're going to attack.
What did the UN say?
They said it was fine, but they say I can't withdraw
no, the
UN
says it's fine, it's fine. This is very good. You do what you want to do. The UN sanctions it. You're okay. Yeah. Think of the consequences and deal with them in a good way.
I have good news for you, Amelia.
And so our relationship together, they know we can trust each other, and they know I'm going to help them and not let them flounder too long if I can help it, but really they have to put it together themselves, and so that relationship is really the thing that holds us together. And I'm in the dark. I have a motto. I sort of go by slogan. I go by with the game. It's learning to live and work comfortably in the unknown. And I'm in the unknown from the moment I step in the classroom. And I almost have to be, I think, to be a good teacher. If it's all drawn out in a script, there's no creativity. There's no life in it, and the students know that too.
Actually, I can't tell them anything because I don't know the answer, and I admit the truth to them right up front. I don't know. And because I don't know, they've got to dig up the answer. And so I apologize to them as well. I say, I'm so sorry, boys and girls, but the truth is we have left this world to you in such a sad and terrible shape. We hope you can fix it for us, and maybe this game will help you learn how to do it.
We're speaking with John Hunter, who teaches fourth grade in Virginia, about a unique experience he's brought to his classroom called the World Peace Game. And John, you make a joke about how your students have solved global warming a couple of different times. What were the solutions?
Well, yeah, I don't want to give too much away because we have teams who've yet to play, but I can sort of hint a little bit. They deal with climate change in different ways. Sometimes they use a technological approach. They sometimes go the green route with more plantings on a vast scale to replace wetlands and rainforests and so forth that have been lost on the planet. So there are a number of different approaches, actually, and I've seen it happen ever since we put that crisis in, I think about 8 years ago. Every time we play, the students have to deal with that now. And that's coupled with about 49 other problems, including water rights issues and territorial border disputes and religious and ethnic problems and so forth. So it's all intermixed. The problems are interlocked. You can't simply think in terms of one problem alone, as we really can in the world as adults. And they practice this kind of interdependent, interrelated thinking. Hopefully it's a tool that lasts through practice like that.
There's a clip I want to play from your TED Talk that is this amazing story about this little girl who had a vision. And at the time, you all thought she had just gone bonkers.
In this game, we had a little girl And she was the defense minister of the poorest nation. And defense minister, she had a tank corps and an air force and so forth. And she was next door to a very wealthy, oil-rich neighbor. Without provocation, suddenly she attacked, against her prime minister's orders, the next door neighbor's oil field. She marched into the oil field reserve, surrounded it without firing a shot, and secured it and held it. And that neighbor was unable to conduct any military operations because their fuel supply was locked up. We were all upset with her. Why are you doing this? This is a world peace game. What is wrong with you? It's a little girl. At 9 years old, she held her peace and said, I know what I'm doing. I mean, to her girlfriend, she said that. You know, that's a kind of a breach there. And we learned in this, you don't really ever want to cross a 9-year-old girl with tanks. They are the toughest opponents. And we were very upset. I thought I was failing as a teacher. Why would she do this? But come to find out, a few game days later, there were turns where we take a negotiation from a team. Then we actually, there's a negotiation period with all teams, and each team takes a turn. Then we go back in a negotiation round and round. So each turn around is one game day. So a few game days later, it came to light that we found out this major country was planning a military offensive and to dominate the entire world. Had they had their fuel supplies, they would have done it. She was able to see the vectors and trend lines and intentions long before any of us and understand what was going to happen and made a philosophical decision to attack in a peace game. Now, she used a small war to avert a larger war, so we stopped and had a very good philosophical discussion about whether that was right, conditional good, or not right. That's the kind of thinking that we put them in the situation. I could not have designed that in teaching. It came about spontaneously through their collective wisdom.
And one of the more sober experiences the students have is that if someone is killed, they're required to write a letter to that person's family.
Yeah, that was a fairly recent innovation. What happened was, I guess I had contact with veterans coming back from Desert Storm and even Afghanistan and Iraq. And, of course, I want to protect my children. I don't want them exposed to frightening and awful things. But I also want to get across the idea that, you know, a commitment like that, even in a game, does have a cause. And so what I asked them to do is to write a letter to the fictional parents of their troops if they lose in battle. And I asked them to explain what happened, asked them to explain why it happened, and then to offer some words to the parents to help them hopefully understand. And it's a very moving thing. Students, I think it doesn't go quite as deep for them. It is a game still. But if there are adults in the room, I think it really does hit home what we're asking of the students and what kind of range we're trying to bring about for the student understanding, at least planting the seed for that kind of consideration in the future.
We had this situation come up last summer, actually, at Agnew Hurd School in Albemarle County, and one of our military commanders got up to read that letter, and one of the kids said, Mr. Hunter, let's ask, there's a parent over there, it was a parent visiting that day, just sitting in the back of the room, let's ask that mom to read the letter. It'll be more realer if she reads it. So we did. We asked her, and she gamely picked up the letter, sure. She started reading. She read one sentence. She read two sentences. By the third sentence, she was in tears. I was in tears. Everybody understood that when we lose somebody, the winners are not gloating. We all lose.
You're in a really unique position because you've given this experience to your students for over 30 years now. Have you noticed any differences in the way students have played or play the game over the past 30 years?
Yes, I would say so. Back in the beginning, students were more apt or more ready to commit to combat and warfare. They seemed to enjoy the challenge and going at it that way. And it may have been media influence. It may have been our culture at the time. This was the late 1970s, 78, 79, when we started. So I think in the 80s there was that attitude, at least especially among the young men, the young boys. They were more than apt to attack first and ask questions later. And what I've noticed over time is that there's a greater reluctance to engage in combat first. There's more thinking, more thoughtfulness, more exploring alternatives. And I say, particularly my girls, they have always been, I think, a little bit more consensus-oriented in my classes that I've seen. But I think the leadership capability is more apparent now than ever before. that the girls are not hesitant to step up and take leadership positions, and that negotiation skills that some of them bring to the job are great for the game and great for everybody playing. So those kinds of changes I have seen occur over the years.
What happens when the game is over? Do you have a debrief with the kids? And what's their reaction when it's all done?
Oh, yeah. We spend a week or longer. Mm-hmm. Actually, there's a number of questions, essay questions, open-ended questions that I have prepared for them to wrestle with. And things come up in the questionnaire like, what makes a good negotiator? Or can you have peace while having violence? I mean, it's a very philosophical, tough question that they have just wrestled with. And so they have a great, greater depth of understanding, and the insight's just phenomenal. And I find that that's true because I have students who come up 10, 20, 30 years later, Allison, who let me know they remember something I've completely forgotten that happened in the game and how that affected their lives, even down to the choice of the career they've gone into. So that kind of effect, that kind of resonance is startling to me, and it's very gratifying. And I feel like as a teacher, you're reaching through time. You're making an effect here in this room today that you're not even aware of. And yet, decades later, maybe even generations later, the effect can become apparent. So it's a very huge responsibility you can feel as an educator that way.
In view of all the crises being solved, and in view of everyone's asset value being over $100 billion, I hereby declare this World Peace Game won!
Every game we play is different. Some games are more about social issues, some are more about economic issues, some games are more about warfare. But I don't try and deny them that reality of being human. I allow them to go there and through their own experience learn in a bloodless way how not to do what they consider to be the wrong thing, and they find out what is right their own way, their own selves. And so in this game, I've learned so much from it, but I would say that if only they could pick up a critical thinking tool or a creative thinking tool from this game and leverage something good for the world, they may save us all. If only. And on behalf of all of my teachers on whose shoulders I'm standing, thank you. Thank you.
John Hunter, thank you so much for joining us in the TED Radio Hour.
Oh, Allison, what a pleasure. Thank you, and you're most welcome.
John Hunter. He's a fourth grade teacher from Charlottesville, Virginia, and subject of the documentary World Peace and Other Fourth Grade Achievements. You can find out more about the film. Go to our website, ted.npr.org. Our program is produced by Jeff Rogers, Megan Kane, and Sam Greenspan. Thanks to our partners at TED, Chris Anderson, June Cohen, Janet Lee, Emily McManus, and Darren Triff. Also, thanks to NPR's Eric Newsom. I'm Allison Stewart. You've been listening to Ideas Worth Spreading on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.